So welcome back to Pax Europiana, the podcast about peace in Europe and also about peace in the Middle East. And now obviously it's very tragic again, because again in 2021 we have a war in, not in Europe, but very close to Europe. And the war, which was entirely avoidable, has escalated to these tragic levels, with so many missiles flying over and into Israeli cities, and so many people dying in this tragic escalation starting from the 11th of May 2021. I'm talking about the Jerusalem crisis of 2021. However, that war will go down in history, which term it will have, the 2021 Israel-Gaza war, that remains to be seen. But it's a tragedy. You know, everybody who is in goodwill and for peace in the world will be very sad about this situation. And I think it was entirely avoidable. And even me in this podcast have already called, and I feel reminded for peace. And that this is a thing we have to be active on. We, in a way, as Americans and Europeans together, united. And make a peace proposal, like I will make also in this podcast. And I feel myself very reminded on my now 2 years activities on Twitter in the Azerbaijan-Armenian conflict, where the war was completely foreseeable, the escalations were already there, and then it happened, and it's of course a tragedy. So what needs to be done? Obviously, I call on all sides to stop the fighting, and also to have a peace mission from the United States and from the European Union together. So maybe the British, a kind of joint initiative, obviously, maybe also involve Canada and also involve the Arab League and, you know, the international, not the UN, because it's too much Russia and China then into it again. We don't need that. We can do that with our means and with our efforts, I think so, and with the influence we have on all sides, at least we should. And we have obviously to coordinate this very clearly with Egypt and with Turkey and with Saudi Arabia. These are, in some aspects, I think, our allies. I know not everybody agrees with what I will say in this podcast, but fine. Egypt just, the president just get a high medal award from the French president, so the contacts must be somehow very good. And in Turkey, I would like to remind everybody, as we all know, that Turkey is a NATO ally. And by the way, Saudi Arabia is an ally of the West since the Second World War, maybe even before, like it was a British ally and then an American ally. So there is no doubt about it, and we have to work together to calm this before it gets out of hand, because a new intifada-style kind of year-long with a lot of atrocities, people lost, is exactly serving the interests of the Hamas, which is a terrorist organization. They unfortunately have been allowed to keep their stronghold, their fiefdom in the Gaza Strip. And this is, I think, one of the fundamental problems which we also have to fix. I strictly would clearly want to say from the beginning of this podcast that the Hamas is a terrorist organization. It's already ranked like this, and it's quite clearly that it should be not allowed to govern anything. And it should be blacklisted, outlawed, and disbanded. And their ideology is a kind of Nazi-style genocidal ideology. Obviously, it's not the Nazi party. I know that myself. Yeah, don't get excited. Yeah, the point is, it's a party which is exactly like that from its thinking. It is advocating the end of the Israeli people and the end of the Israeli state. And it's that's a kind of a very big link to the Nazi ideology. So what I would like to see, obviously, is a joint European-American effort for peace, and also then a heavy intervention into the Gaza Strip. That's absolutely necessary. Look, also because the question is now debated, who is really responsible? And, you know, there's a lot of anti-Israeli thinking, you know, that Netanyahu wanted to manipulate the situation to get out of his kind of court case and make it impossible to form a government, you know, and a lot of sinister plotting might be also part of the truth. Yeah. Who knows all the facts and figures? Yeah. But one fundamental thing is, I think, very important to understand. Nobody forced the Hamas to put 1,000 missiles on Tel Aviv and the other Israeli cities. Yeah. So it is, you know, when you have, of course, your injustice, and when you have, you know, there was also a murder of an Arab Israeli or Palestinian in these days. And, you know, there's a lot of things happened. You know, there's no area in the world where more difficult situations have happened in the last 2,000 years. And, you know, there is always a reason to escalate if you want to escalate. But there is also always a reason for restraint if you want to somehow restrain. And obviously the Hamas didn't want to do that. They are very much in a different geography point from Israel, but they decided to show off their missiles, to test the Iron Dome, the defense system. And, you know, this is the way to escalate a war, a kind of conflict, into a full-scale war. Obviously, Israel then had also then fought back, you know, and then we have all these terrible pictures which we have seen. But, you know, obviously Israel as a democracy, every democracy as a state with the citizens have influence on the governing, has also obviously the task to defend its citizens. And obviously it has also the task to do that proportionate. Yeah, and up to the moment they are doing it, I cannot see anything proportionate in the terrorist Hamas doing exactly what they're doing, sending these missiles from basically Iranian-made and also now much more modern than modern in terms of military technology. And they have this technology now. They can do it. They can target Jerusalem and Tel Aviv. And so they are the ones who put it on that level. They are the ones who, you can also always stay in their own argumentation. They certainly find always a reason why that is justified. But objectively, from the side of an international observer, obviously, that is by far not proportionate what they have done. And they are simply a terrorist organization, and they should be internationally completely ostracized and also not participate in any form of electoral democracy and political process in the Palestinian states in the future. And they must be treated like the NSDAP was treated after the World War II. And they must be first militarily defeated, and then by Egypt, basically. That's my argument here, not by Israel. And then the OIC and the International the Organization of Islamic States must give a mandate to Egypt to militarily pacify the Gaza Strip, and then to rebuild it on a 10-year mandate into a working democracy. And I will talk about that also in the second part of this podcast. But, you know, I'm always trying here in this podcast to make concrete proposals. No blah blah, no kind of theories and no kind of what could be done, but concretely, who should do what? Then the Americans obviously should back this mission with military means, supply, and also secure that the Egyptians are able to do exactly that, because it is time to change and to end the power grip of Hamas on the Gaza Strip, and that must be done by Egypt in the lead. So, now comes to the role what Europe can do. And I made several podcasts, if you follow my debates in the recent weeks, yeah, about the Palestinian and the Middle East peace. Again, I will repeat it because it's important. We have the institutional answers. Obviously, Europe doesn't have the military tools or will to act militarily, but we have the institutional answers for this very complicated conflicts in the near Middle East, for Lebanon, for Jordan, later also for ex-Syria, and definitely also for Israel and Palestine, because we can offer the tools we have. And that's the following. First of all, the OSZE. It was created for conflict prevention. It was created for reconciliation, for democracy and for political processes. So that was actually created to have a tool for human rights with the Soviet Union. I mean, that's a very big enemy and that's a very hostile state in 75. Yeah. And it was created for that. So it's absolutely possible to bring Israel and the new state of Palestine, I will talk about it, but also the Palestinian Authority already, into the OSZE, and then to work with both sides, with two separate missions, to build a political process and to help the democracy, to help the human rights, to get a lot of OSZE people into Israel and Palestine, and to work on what the OSZE does best. Human rights, democratization, municipal democracy, and so on and so on. Media freedom, and so on and so on. So as full members they should be, or as observers we can discuss, but with missions, yeah, absolutely, that's already a powerful tool we have. And it's quite simple. I'm also calling for OSZE then for Egypt, yeah, for Jordan, for Lebanon. It's so logical. The second organization, and here it's very important, that would already help a lot, actually. And it's quite simple to do. We also have Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan in OSCE, and I'm anyhow for enlargement of that organization. That helps in the political process. Whenever, you know, it's not a magic fix. Nothing can be a magic fix. And the second thing, we have the so-called Council of Europe. Yes, okay, it's not Europe. That's, I understand that, but it is not so, does really geography matter so much? We have Council of Europe, also Azerbaijan, we have Turkey in Council of Europe, we have Russia in Council of Europe. Yeah? Russia, that means Vladivostok and Buratsia and all the other regions of the whole of the Russian Federation. Does it work so good? Yeah, that's another debate now. But, you know, it is very logical that we should extend the jurisdiction and the membership and all the tools of the Council of Europe for the Middle East, for this part of the Middle East. I'm not talking about Saudi Arabia and the Gulf. I'm talking about Israel, about Palestine, about Lebanon, and about potentially also Jordan and whatever comes out of Syria in the future. But start now, because we're talking about Israel, with Israel to be member. And, you know, that has a big significant meaning when it comes to all the, for example, very hot property potatoes there. Let's, the Council of Europe, and the Council of Europe has exactly that, the rule of law, the property rights, yeah. Let's put them all to the Council of Europe. Okay, some people will say it's impossible. Yes, and you know, there must be a lot of legislation, and this is a maybe century to work for the lawyers in Strasbourg. Or I'm actually for the moving of the Council of Europe to Dansk. But nevertheless, you know, that's definitely very complicated. But it's very complicated, but there's a legal process. And I remind you, we have in Europe many, many places, like between Kosovo and Serbia, there was billions of euros of properties exchange and regulation, theft, and later then restitution, and later then legal battles about that one. And the same was true also in the case, we have also different precedents, like, for example, the case of the so-called, I should not use the term, but it's more logical to use it, the Sudetendeutschen in Czechoslovakia and the Hungarians in Czechoslovakia. You know, we have different precedents, and they are all, you know, the Cypriot and the Cypriot Turks and the invasion and the property. This is for the Council of Europe to sort out. You know, there's many ways then to settle that with financial compensation, with physical restitution, with somehow recognition of facts. Yeah, that is also possible. And there must be this is really, we should try to find a way to settle all this question, the question of return and the question of property. This should not be done by missiles. It's not the European way, and it's not the way which is very useful, because with missiles you can do a damage a moment, but the only thing the Israelis will react is obviously send 10 missiles back. And, you know, if you would be the Israeli prime minister, probably you would do the same. Or you wouldn't be very long the Israeli prime minister, because the people wouldn't vote for you. So ultimately, the situation can, and it's much better to solve it on the juridical way, because this is about property, this is about, you know, where, who can live where, this is about building permits. And, you know, there's certainly from every aspect some story, some truth, and this is for the courts, for the international courts to settle. I think it's the better way than the military way, and I think I'm right with that. So, then we come to the question of the economic settlement, and here Europe has also a lot to offer. I'm calling, and don't be shocked by it, but the way to settle in this way towards two states is obviously that they are economically like so close in the European context that the real borders, which then between states will exist, will economically not be very, very harmful. Okay, what I say concretely is that Israel to join the EU customs union on the same level like Turkey is already there, and also the Palestinian Authority to do the same. And so both also then, once there is an international recognized state, I will talk about it, of Palestine, I will talk about it because I'm in favor and I will talk about it very soon. It is that both of them are in the EU customs union as Turkey is today. So the customs area will be the same. There will be no customs differences. There will be no, in a way, no Palestinian state which has a different customs policy. No, this will be the same. It would be economically very harmful anyhow, because they are now integrated economically. So to separate them to some extent, physically they are quite separated, but customs-wise, they are in one system, obviously. So this has to stay the same, and the European Union to provide the framework for that. That's good for us in Europe. We have two new members in our... It's anyhow the most important trading partners of both. It's maybe a little bit complicated to adopt for the Israelis, but it's ultimately very beneficial, and we anyhow have talked now so long for an update of our trade relations with the Israelis. So it's quite logically to do this role model, which we have with Turkey already, and then to have a customs union with both states as the ultimate result, and as in the process already to get it done. That's for the customs union. Then obviously for the currency. The currency is much better for both countries to have a euro-pegged currency, a currency bought to the euro, or in the optimum, I think it's best to have the euro for both. And to be quite simple, there is basically one currency, and that's fine. Obviously, the Israelis love their shekels, and I read that a lot of the Palestinians, they use the dollar, and in Israel it's also very popular, and then also there is the Jordanian currency in use in the Palestinian Authority, and probably they in Hamas they have a lot of whatever they have there, and in Gaza. But what is much better is to have the euro, because the euro is anyhow the main trading partner, is the European Union, and to have the euro there, why not? It's a neutral, nice currency. It will be the same currency for both states. It will be no economic difference, no discrimination, no nationalism according to the currency. Much better. Is it fair? Is it good? It's my proposal. Of course, the Israelis won't like it. They say, wonderful, it's the end of our sovereignty. Like the Polish say that and the Ukrainians say that. But economically, as a part of a two-state settlement, to have the same currency, to have a currency which is administered by the European Central Bank in Frankfurt, objectively, not manipulated. And, you know, to have a Palestinian with their own currency, which is then inflationary, deflationary, crisis, and worthless ultimately after some time, I don't see that as a very good. If it's necessary, good, then to have a own currency, but to back it from the beginning with a currency board like Bosnia. But for me, in the part of a two-state settlement, the euro is the optimum situation. And it's so logical. Now let's come to the security arrangement and how to really establish a two-state settlement. I said 20 years ago, 25 years ago, also as a student already, that it's very logical that if we want to have peace in the Middle East, it's NATO membership for Israel, which is so logical. Yeah, and it's the same today. If we don't secure Israel with our means, also as Europeans, with all our background of the Holocaust and all the crimes, it's anyhow a moral obligation. And basically, we anyhow secure Israel, yeah, more or less morally. But, you know, when we, and ultimately we would actually, even Germany, I think, would commit to forces if it's really necessary. It won't be. But I think to have also this kind of, when we really want to have a two-state settlement, we also have to do something about it. And we have to tell the Israelis, here is the security guarantee. Here is NATO membership. We want you to get this over with and have the situation settled, to have Israel recognizing a Palestinian state, and then also to be secure. And so that's NATO membership for Israel. And also to have, and that's the second step, to have the Palestinian Authority recognized as a state, yeah, with the capital, obviously, of Ramallah. And that's where it is anyhow today. And I will talk about all these other issues as well. And the thing is then also to have it neutralized and demilitarized, and to have it established in the framework of the Austrian State Treaty of 1955. It's the best precedent. So that means that Palestina will be a neutral state, guaranteed internationally, with clear limitations on all forms of heavy arms, with a limitation of air force, no air force for Palestina, no heavy artillery, no rockets, no offensive military equipment. But similar, like, let's say, there was a similar precedent also in the Kosovo situation with the Kosovo security force. Palestinian security force, of course, a military secret service and, you know, armed country in a sense. You know, that's very good to provide internal security, but not aggressively forward offensive capability. So obviously no navy, no artillery and so on, no rockets and these things. And that is what Austria also accepted in the state treaty. And that is also the precondition for a statehood for Palestina. So that's the neutral form. And then obviously we have to also help Palestina to be a real working democracy. It has not had any elections since I think 2007 or 6, yeah, when the Hamas won. And what we see all over the Middle East is obviously a problem, and that when you have this simply the democracy as some dream of it, yeah, let's vote everybody, let's let everybody participate, and let's have a merry-go-round. And then we have extremist parties which are banned for genocide to run states. And that's obviously not the idea of democracy. Because democracy is not only the voting process and the majority wins and kills everybody else they don't like. That's not democracy. Democracy is a clear institutional framework of the rule of law, of a constitution, of this whole parameters of a working good governance state, yeah, of a working executive with a proportionate kind of evaluation of the situation, and good governance on the one hand of the executive with the rule of law in the framework of the of human rights and our concepts of understanding how power, state power, can be done. It cannot be somehow usurped by a temporary popular party, let's say the Hamas, and then they use a state as an instrument of terror and of war. That's not the way we can endorse democracy. if you think that this is the way and that's the only way to have elections, the Hamas participating, winning, and then bent on for internal revenge killing, and later the moment they can for genocide, that's obviously a very terrible vision of yours then. That's not the way it can be. So it must be assisted democracy, like all our democracies have been developing gradually. I want to remind everybody from this, whatever the struggle from the French Revolution until the real start of European democracy under American tutelage in the and after the end of the Second World War. Our democracies were very defunct in the interwar years and also very limited in most countries, even in the United Kingdom. Very limited form of democracies before the First World War and in France, and a lot of turmoil and crisis. So we cannot obviously let this kind of whole circle repeat in the Palestinian state and then have wars and wars and wars until they have segmented in 200 years some kind of democratic level. So it must be assisted, a kind of supervised democracy. We have that also, for example, in Kosovo, where when you are an extra, or in Bosnia, the so-called bond powers and this kind of level of democracy, we have to also make sure, because now we give all the responsibility to the chief of the Palestinian Authority, and he, out of fear of Hamas winning, which they would ultimately do, is not making democracy and not making elections. That is also leading to a delegitimization of his power situation, obviously. So what is the way? I'm not one of the people arguing for somehow a limited franchise. That would also be historically justified in the context of the developing of European democracies, British democracy, that only landowners are eligible to vote or so. But I'm arguing for exactly what the America has done after the Second World War in, for example, Germany, in post-war Germany. You know, there was very clear limitations who could run for political office, which parties were allowed to run. And obviously no ex-Nazi party and no ex-Nazi political functionary of significance was allowed to take political office. And a similar, that's the precedent which can be easily done in the Palestinian Authority. There is an election, Central Election Commission. Obviously, they have the right and the task. Everybody who is beyond the lines of democratic acceptable policy, like who is, for example, the Hamas, cannot run in an election. Who thinks like the Hamas cannot run for political office, and so on and so on. And who is also a convicted terrorist or somebody who is, and that's, of course, difficult to assess. Yeah, I understand it's not easy. But somebody who is a pro-terrorist sympathizer can loses his civic rights. I mean, it took a long time for the ex-Nazis to get voting rights again. And I know it's complicated, yeah. But if you want to have a takeover of the Hamas, of the Palestinian state, I don't think that this will lead to peace. Yeah, obviously not. It will lead to war. And all the resources of a whole population of a new state of Palestine then in the hand of a politically extreme ideology which is bent for genocide and for war, that will be obviously leading to another intervention. Or the prospects of it to a reality where the Israel will never accept a Palestinian state. So we have to be also, beyond all our principles, we also have to be realistically with whom we deal and in what kind of context a new state is born. So I'm on track record, you know, I'm very very much for new states. I'm also very much for new states who are working, and they should be better than the status quo. New states who are worse and should not be accepted by the international community. So let's talk concretely. That means a new Palestinian state has obviously under this treaty some kind of supervision of the international community. That can be like Bosnia. That can be like Kosovo for some years. Yeah, and also a very clear constitutional framework which is handed over to the state in coordination, but very clear also electoral framework which is built by as a part of that state treaty. And also in Austria, let's remind ourselves, it was certainly impossible that pro-Nazi sympathizers would get state power in Austria. It took a long time and was very controversial that even the children of some of them, yeah, and some of, you know, of course, you know, when you know Austrian and German history very well, as I tend to think, you can always argue that certain individuals with a certain background were then allowed at least to be advisors or serve in the military again, and so on and so on. I know many of the cases. So it's not, you know, and it should also not be abused, you know, that somebody who has in his youth maybe done this can never ever have political power. That we have seen also in the case of Iraq, not as the wisest move to exclude the Ba'ath Party for too long and the Ba'ath Party activists. Yeah, so we have to be also rational and responsible in that management. Yeah, obviously, and it can evolve by time. Yes, absolutely. But the clarity should be democracy in the Palestinian areas cannot be like this, free for all, Hamas is winning and destroys the state from the beginning, because then it's basically still born. And it's the illusion about the intent of some of the people, like for example the Hamas and the political groups, yeah, that then leads to a process where everybody can participate. And it must be, because it's democracy, everybody can say something. No, look, it's also not in Austria today. Yeah? And it's not that this is a limitation. When I call for terrible crimes here on this podcast and somebody hears it, yeah, and then I run for political office, do you think I will be allowed for that? I mean, Americans are so naive in their thinking about goodwill for everybody, yeah? And everybody join the free world, yes. But if there is a very entrenched ideological core of hatred and of genocidal thinking, like in the Hamas, it's utterly illusionary to call then for free elections where they are allowed to participate in the name of democracy and then being able to legitimately take power. And then it's more like Hitler taking power in 1933 than a real democracy. And that must be avoided at all costs. So, how now then to have the situation of Gaza regulated? Because, and to my best knowledge, it's very clear that the in Palestinian Authority more or less provides, and even the relatively critical German television, there was now a lot of reportage, but the, I have not been now since a long time. I was twice in Israel. And I also visited parts of the Palestinian authority and the territory in that years, but it was before the establishment. So it's a long time ago. I don't claim to be a massive insider, but I give you my philosophy, my take on that, and I hope you bear with me. For the Gaza Strip, obviously that's a big mistake, and I called already for the mandate of the International Islamic Organization, OIC, to give the administration and the peacekeeping task to Egypt. Not to make Anschluss and exit, no, this will be part of the Palestinian state, but it will be for 10 years administered by Egypt under a mandate of the Islamic organization, of the OIC, and it will be like that. And they will have to secure that there will be no Iranian weapons, that there will be no Hamas in the political process, that there will be no kind of terror from that territory going to Israel or to anywhere, and obviously that everybody who has committed crimes will be dealt according to the Egyptian judicial system. That's the way to deal with it, I think so, and that's what I call for. So that's for Gaza. Then I have made already, and it's complicated issues about the Jerusalem status, the land borders between the two states. Yeah, I have made a framework where the land borders matter less. Yeah, and this is in the customs union, in the currency union, in the Council of Europe, and these things can be settled, and ultimately in a security arrangement which is really working reliable, and that is NATO. in the Jordan Valley and some of the border areas, there can be international missions by NATO, and that was the better way to do it. Similar like we have it in Kosovo at the borders with Serbia. It is one way to do it, and it works relatively well for a temporary period, for 10, 15 years, in order to have a certain period of constant presence. And then also later, once also the relation with Jordan in the customs union, Jordan also to back the currency towards the euro and to have much more, and Jordan also to join OECD. And so we gradually can lead to a détente. Yeah, I think that is the most important things. The similar I would like to call for the same for Lebanon, for Jordan, and also for all the countries which come out of Syria. I'm, as you know, some of the, you might have listened to my podcast already, I'm calling for new states in Syria. That means many of them, so 6-7 new states, and then to dissolve Syria and each of the Syrian successor states to go through the same process and to be ultimately in OECD, Council of Europe, also have the euro and in the customs union, and to be pacified by missions from the Islamic International Organization, either by Turkey or by Egypt or Saudi Arabia militarily, and also to create a rule of law and order, stability, but not by such fucks as Assad, but by the neighboring states, and then also to pacify them and then to reconstruct and reintegrate them according to existing and working European frameworks, which have worked, and methods which have worked, even when they're controversial out of the today's context, they have worked for post-war Germany, for post-war Austria, for post-war Kosovo and Bosnia, and especially the Kosovo and Bosnian context are very relevant for these regions of the former Ottoman Empire, and they are very good. You know, it's not perfect, but if you have a better context, and if any of the diplomats which listen, who are now working since Oslo, and Mr. Verhofstadt has called now for the Oslo process, a new Oslo process. Sorry. So if anybody has a better and a better working process to propose, yeah, something which is really different, yeah. But all the politicians and all the diplomats who have worked now in the Middle East since Oslo 92, and they have not really achieved so much. Yeah. Let's see where we are in 2021. You know, I proposed now a European kind of peacemaking based on European post-war mechanisms which are working in after the end of the Second World War and the end of the Balkan Wars. Yeah, I call for the same also for Ukraine, and this is the same mechanisms, but also for the near Middle East. Yeah. And the same mechanisms are available. It's a question if we want to engage. I obviously also then call for Israel and for Palestine and for Jordan and for Lebanon. Sorry, my voices. And I call them for all of them also to be in the Southeastern European reform mechanisms, from the energy community to the transport community, and also to all of them others, and also to build good governance working states as we have done in the Balkans. So as we have done it for the northern part of the former Ottoman Empire, and for post-Yugoslavia, we will do it for ex-Syria, and we will also have the same mechanism working for Israel and Palestine. And it's a much more humane and peaceful and reasonable approach, where of course Europe has to do much more, because then with the present status quo, they are always fighting there, they escalate in a second, and the only thing we can do in Europe is call in the Americans. I'm desperately calling Washington to do something, yeah? While we are normally just sending money and not really doing anything in terms of political settlement, yeah? Just criticizing everything from the distance and having better ideas, yeah? Without any concrete engagements of the Europeans in any meaningful form. And here is now what I propose. And I think all of that can be done. all of them is a little bit thinking out of the box, yeah? But it's much better than sending missiles and rockets, and it's much better than exploding buildings. Let's be clear, I'm here very much biased on the Israeli side. Because why? I stand with Israel on that one. I think it's outrageous what this Hamas has done, but it's also the result of us letting Hamas, basically terrorist Nazi style organization, to run several significant parts of the world, yeah, and to exploit the people and to take them hostage, basically. And it's us, the Western world, who has allowed this totally disastrous situation happening, yeah, backed by Iran. And let's see how much involvement Russia has in all of that. When we see, when the history will be written, we will certainly see that obviously Iran has a big hand, and behind Iran is obviously Russia. So we in the West have allowed this to slip for too long, and it's the diplomats which had no better solutions, which had no answers. And when you look at the history of the modern Middle East in the last years since the end of the Cold War, I really wonder if the diplomats are really so good, yeah, in terms of effectiveness of settlement, yeah. And now we are again in 2021, since the 11th of May, in a war in the Middle East, in Israel, inside Israel. There is a terrorist organization which has been allowed to rearm and resupply with Iranian help and whoever else got the weapons to them. And they are doing this kind of attacks. And we as Europeans, if you want to go into bigger details, I saw the interview with the German foreign minister yesterday on the edge of desperation. And also he is a great friend of Israel. He is a great friend of peace and he knows history better than any of us. He is a really great activist of anti-fascism and of a peaceful Europe. But ultimately he said, and he is calling the Americans to help. This is what we can do. Mr. Borrell disappeared. Mr. Mitchell, Michel, tweets. This is the level of what we can do after we have built up for 25 years now the Palestinian Authority. And we have hoped everything will be good without us doing anything, without us further engaging, with us now ignoring the situation. I know it's a way to do, to ignore and to hope things get better by time, but it is not. It doesn't work. And so we have to be active for peace. And we are a rich continent now. We can contribute. And contrary to the Americans, which have the hard assets, we have the institutional framework for all this. Yeah? You know, and I don't say it's automatically, yeah? But we have the precedents. Yeah? We have the institutions. It's only the only way for a lasting peace in the Middle East, yeah, is European institutional inclusion in the, our working frameworks from the Council of Europe, OECD, Customs Union, the Euro, and all the other aspects, and obviously NATO and the Austrian-style neutrality, international supervised and assisted democracy for the Palestinian state, similar to Kosovo or to Bosnia. And that's the way forward for the Middle East. And that's my call for peace. And it's a more humane, it's a costly way, but it's a more humane and a more serious way, which can make Europe proud to be helpful for peace in our proximity, in our neighborhood, in our area where we hopefully feel this powerful moral obligation to be useful for peace and for security. And that's also in our interest. If you want to discuss it only in interest terms, it's much better for Europe to have peace, security, stability in the nearer Middle East. It's good for us to have that on a trajectory of peace, this important region between Turkey and Egypt and Saudi Arabia. And ultimately, they are all three, our allies. So they are also waiting for us if we are useful or not. And they all cannot build up these institutions. Yeah? We have them already. We have them thanks to the Americans and the British, yeah? Obviously after World War II. We have them also working in the Balkans. Yeah? But we have somehow abandoned the trust in our institutions, or we think it's too far. It doesn't concern us, or what? I cannot understand. So that's my plan for peace in the Middle East. I think I hopefully was very clear. It's of course controversial, difficult, but it's a working plan for peace for the Middle East. And it's my scenario, which I hope. And I call in closing, I call all sides to stop the bloodshed, to intervene also in Gaza, but not the Israelis. Don't go into Gaza. Let the Egyptian sort and Gaza out, and also then to back that up internationally and make sure the Hamas is never ever to be close running any kind of state-led or any political authority, and all their supporters obviously excluded from the political process for many years to come. I think that's the way to make peace in the Middle East and in Israel. I say peace for everybody. Also, as we say, peace, shalom. And also the Arab word for peace is, let me think, it's salam, shalom, peace, pax. That was Pax Arabiana for peace in the Middle East. Thanks a lot for listening. Bye.